peace transforms our lives, enabling us to know and love the God who created us, to live freely in accordance with his will, and to cooperate in building a truly human and fraternal society.
Why do I have to go to Mass? Why don't priests marry? Is it absurd to believe in God in today's world? These are just some of the questions that Vatican Radio will be putting to Monsignor John Kennedy, an official from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, in a new series running throughout the Year of Faith. It's a way of helping people along as they respond to Pope Benedict XVI's invitation to all of us to deepen our knowledge of why we believe what we believe. The Holy Father is also encouraging us to seek out answers to questions of faith by picking up the Catechism of the Catholic Church. This, he says, gives us the food for thought that we are all seeking. So if you have any questions, big or small, questions that you have always wanted to ask but never have, this is your chance. You can send them on to Monsignor Kennedy at our email address, news@vatiradio.va, or on Vatican Radio English Section's Facebook page, and tune in each Tuesday to find out the answers to your questions of faith. Once again, part three of our series on Holy Days of Obligation. For our listeners, we are joined by our very own official from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, Monsignor John Kennedy.
Hello, Eimear.
Welcome back. Well, this week you're going to be taking us on a journey from June to December within the year, looking at the Holy Days of Obligation, a question sent in to us by listeners from the United Kingdom. We have arrived at the point of the feasts of St. Peter and Paul last week. So, very simple question to start us off this week. What is the seventh day of obligation during the year for us Catholics?
The seventh day of holy obligation is a very beautiful day, and it is the solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. In fact, it's a very old feast, celebrated for many years by the Church, and in fact celebrated universally since the 6th century. The feast commemorates the death of Mary and her bodily assumption into heaven. Like the Feast of the Ascension, which we were speaking about last time, it gives us a foretaste or a preview of our own bodily resurrection. Mary, who was one like us in all things but sin, was taken up into heaven, assumed into heaven, and at the end of her life, we look to her because that is our hope too, that we would share that same grace. It's celebrated every year on the 15th of August. And the feast was actually originally celebrated first in the East, where it was known as the Feast of the Dormition, a word which means the falling asleep. They describe the Feast of Mary falling asleep. And the earliest printed reference to the belief that Mary's body was assumed into heaven dates from the 4th century in a document entitled The Falling Asleep of the Holy Mother of God. The document is written in the voice of the Apostle St. John, to whom Christ, as he was crucified on the cross, had entrusted the care of his mother. And it recounts the death, the laying in the tomb, and the assumption, most especially, of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Tradition variously places Mary's death at Jerusalem or at Ephesus, where in fact John was living.
Isn't it true, however, that there is a dogma or a formal proclamation, if you will, by the Church concerning Our Lady's Assumption?
You're right. The Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary into heaven at the end of her earthly life is defined as a dogma in the Catholic Church. We have to go back to 1950, to the 1st of November, in fact, when Pope Pius XII, exercising what we call papal infallibility, declared that it is a dogma of the Church that the Immaculate Mother of God, the ever-Virgin Mary, having completed the course of her earthly life, was assumed body and soul into heavenly glory.
Thank you. we're moving on through the year and we've come to the month of August. So what is the next holy day of obligation?
Well, the next, we have to skip through the months of September and October, and we have to wait until November until we get to the next day, which of course is the Feast of All Saints on the 1st of November. All Saints Day is a surprisingly old feast. It arose out of the Christian traditions of celebrating saints on the anniversary of their martyrdom. Now, when there were few martyrs, it was easy to do that. But when martyrdoms increased during the persecutions of the late Roman Empire, local dioceses instituted a common feast in order to ensure that all of the martyrs, whether those were known or unknown, were properly honoured. And this practice then spread to the universal church. A little bit later, by the 4th century, the Feast of All the Saints was celebrated in Antioch, and St. Ephrem mentioned it in a sermon he gave in 373. In the early centuries, this feast was celebrated not in November, but during the Easter season. And if you find yourself in one of the Eastern churches, you'll see that both Catholic and Orthodox still celebrated at that time. However, the current date of the 1st of November was instituted in the 8th century by Pope Gregory III. He lived from 731 till 741, a 10-year reign, and he consecrated a chapel to all of the martyrs in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, and as a result of that, he ordered that there should be an annual celebration. This celebration was originally confined to the Diocese of Rome, but then later in the 9th century, Pope Gregory IV, from 827 to 844, that's when he lived, he extended the feast to the entire church and ordered that the date be changed and be moved to the 1st of November.
So we're moving now towards the end of the year, but before we get there, isn't there another feast dedicated especially to Our Lady?
There is. That is the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. And in its oldest form, it goes back to the 7th century, when churches in the East began celebrating the Feast of the Conception of Saint Anne, who, of course, is the mother of Mary. Now, some people can be confused about this, and they're saying to themselves, what are we celebrating on this day? And I think it's important to say that the feast celebrates not the conception of Christ, but the conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary in the womb of Saint Anne, her mother. And so if you get your maths thinking cap on, this is why 9 months later, on September the 8th, we celebrate the Nativity, or the birth of the Virgin Mary. And that's why, with the Feast of the Annunciation, which happens in March, 9 months later, you roll forward to the birth of Christ at Christmas.
This Feast of the Immaculate Conception is also specifically tied to perhaps one of the most, if not the most, popular Marian shrines in the entire world, the Shrine of Lourdes. Why?
St. Bernadette in Lourdes was at the grotto at Massabielle one day, and Our Lady appeared to her, and in a series of apparitions to her, she finally revealed that she was the Immaculate Conception to a young girl in a very rural part of France who didn't have much schooling because she came from a very poor family who'd fallen on very hard times. She didn't really know what this could mean. So she went running to the parish priest and said to her that the lady who had appeared to her in the grotto of Massabielle told her to tell the priest to build a church, that people will come and do penance, that they come in procession. And by the way, she was the Immaculate Conception. Now, that was, I think, 1854. And in 1858, the Pope Pius IX issued the dogma of the Immaculate Conception. It was interesting that St. Bernadette had this news 4 years before, and the great mystery then continues to bear fruit these days, because Lourdes is just a wonderful place of Marian pilgrimage where people go to deepen their faith and receive all sorts of healing, particularly spiritual healing.
So the Immaculate Conception brings us up to Holy Day of Obligation number 9 throughout the year, which means we've covered all the Holy Days of Obligation and now we have arrived at only one more. But we're already at the 8th of December, so what is the last Holy Day of Obligation?
Well, I don't have any prizes to give out, but of course the answer is Christmas. And it's very fitting that at the end of the year, we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, who is the Saviour of the world, you might think that, well, wait a second, Christmas doesn't really sound like a holy day. I mean, there's really no obligation. We kind of are very glad to go to Mass that day and share and pray and sing the beautiful hymns and carols and so on. And in fact, it's this kind of joy on this particular event that really captures the kind of spirit of joy and celebration that really we should strive to have for the rest of those celebrations as well, because this is a holy joy. It's a willing joy. It's a delight, if you like, at being able to join together to listen to God's word and to celebrate our faith as a community and to deepen those, as I said in the very beginning, two programmes ago, about these being very special, profound faith celebrations which deepen our faith and give us a direction for our life. Although, in fact, Christmas might in some people's minds be the most important holy day of the year. In fact, it is the second most important day of the year, because the primary day is, of course, Easter.
Spoken about fulfilling the holy days of obligation. Again, just a refresher for our listeners, we began speaking three programmes ago about these holy days, 62 in the entire year, but taking away Sundays, which of course is the Lord's Day, we are left with 10 specific special days of celebration. But is there anything else that we can do besides the obligation of participating at Mass?
There is. In fact, there's another important element which helps us to mark these days of faith and celebration. We're asked not just to participate in Mass, but also to abstain from doing unnecessary works. And this is set out for us in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, as well as in the Code of Canon Law, which talks about avoiding things that hinder the worship to be rendered to God, the joy proper to the Lord's Day, or the suitable relaxation of mind and body. A beautiful text, perhaps just even to conclude, is given to us by the blessed Pope John Paul II, and it's called Dies Domini, or the Day of the Lord, and it gives us a special reason for avoiding these unnecessary, what we would have called in the past, servile work. So if I can maybe conclude by quoting a line or two. The Lord's Day, says Pope John Paul II, as Sunday was called from apostolic times, has always been accorded special attention in the history of the Church because of its close connection with the very core of the Christian mystery. In fact, in the weekly reckoning of time, Sunday recalls the day of Christ's resurrection. It is Easter which returns week by week, celebrating Christ's victory over sin and death, the fulfilment in him of the first creation and the dawn of the new creation. It is the day which recalls in grateful adoration the world's first day, and looks forward in active hope to the last day, when Christ will come in glory and all things will be made new.
Well, thank you very much, Monsignor John Kennedy, for bringing us on this tour of the Holy Days of Obligation for Christian faithful throughout the year, helping us to understand a little bit more why these particular days are days of very special celebration of our faith.
Thank you, Emer. It's a beautiful journey.
Well, we look forward to speaking to you next week when we begin the solemn liturgical period of Lent. So we'll be taking a closer look at the period of Lent and the lead up to Easter. We invite all of our listeners who may have any questions regarding the period of Lent and indeed the Easter season to feel free to send them in to us, big or small, at english@vatiradio.va or by private messaging or posting us on our English section Facebook page. Once again, that's English section Facebook. See you next week.
Bye, Emer. Bye-bye.